Now it's time for the Wallops and Assateague Island Report, sponsored by Pohanka of Salisbury. Here's your host, Robin Rothschild.
And good afternoon, I'm Robin. Welcome to the Wallops and Assateague Island Report. I'm here with Keith Kohler, Public Relations Specialist for NASA at Wallops Island. Hey, Keith.
Good to be here today.
Always good to see you.
That's right. Much better weather than last time. I think last time we had the snowstorms.
So that's right.
It was easier to get here today. So.
I don't know, Keith. It's the end of March, and I'm wondering. It's not. Spring is not here yet.
Not here yet. I think Phil was not quite on this year, so we'll see what happens next couple weeks.
Yeah. Keep our fingers crossed. How you doing?
Very good. Very good. It's very busy at Wallops, and it's exciting times coming up. So, it's great to be here.
Well, let's get right into it. I know that that you guys are incredibly busy. You've got so much going on. So what's first on your agenda?
Well, let's see. I guess first we can talk about our aircraft programs. Aircraft folks are extremely busy. We've had the P-3B aircraft, which is our largest atmospheric or science platform that we fly, departed last week for Greenland and to look at the ice sheets in Greenland and do some mapping of those, and then it's flew over to Alaska, so it's currently in Alaska operating out there where they're doing some mapping of the Arctic Ocean and the ice in the Arctic Ocean. So that's an annual event that they've been doing for the most part since 1993, so we have some very accurate mapping going on, especially of Greenland, of the ice and how that's performing over the years and the impact of global climate change on those areas. And so, last I saw was that project is going great. The weather's been very cooperative. They actually showed up in Greenland, and I think they said the temperatures was in the 40s, which is rare for those guys up there.
Isn't that's kind of warm, right?
That's kind of warm, yeah. Typically, I think last year they were operating, and it was like minus 20 or something. So it's a lot different this year, maybe they've got our warm weather, and we've got their cold weather.
Yeah.
I don't know, but... So we have that project going on. We also have another aircraft that departed this morning, Thursday 28th, and it's headed for Alaska, and it's going to be operating up there for 7 months. It carries an experiment for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory out of California, and they're looking at doing some mapping and sampling of the atmosphere in that area and the changes that are going on in the Arctic area of Alaska. In relationship with the vegetation that's starting to pop out as ice is melting and those types of things. So I'm trying to get an understanding of the impact of the atmosphere in that area. So, those two projects are really big. We just finished up with the P-3. It just got back doing some atmospheric mapping in California. I think they were out there for 4 weeks, so they were doing some atmosphere studies out there. When it gets back here, in May, it turns around and does some studies here. Then it goes to Houston in September and does some atmospheric studies over Houston. And then right now the schedule is for those guys to, for the first time, they'll actually be flying in Antarctica coming up this winter. So, and they'll be mapping the Arctic ice sheets up there using the same type of equipment they currently have. So that'd be a first for this aircraft to be flying on out of Antarctica.
Oh, now, when the guys go to Greenland, they stay up there for several months, don't they?
They stay up there pretty much with the plane. We may transfer out, send some, the crews because of the length of time may change, and then the pilots may change. But, the science team, for the most part, will stay up there the whole time with the aircraft. And they also have ground crews as we fly over. That way we can do actual samples of the ice as they fly over. Also, they have some teachers that are participating in the project, so that those teachers can take that experiences back to the classroom. So
that's real hands-on.
Yeah, that's real hands-on.
That is cool.
That's real hands-on. So, the aircraft project office is extremely busy, probably one of our busiest years scheduled for this year.
I wonder if there's any place that, the public can go and get some information on what's going on up there.
Yeah, if you go to our website, www.nasa.gov/wallops, and we will have, you can find the news stories on the things going up there. And typically there's links to the project pages, such as the project in Greenland is called Ice Bridge. So you could actually go to www.nasa.gov/icebridge, and that will take you right to that project. And they have daily blogs and interviews going on from the scientists and the project folks up there. The one in Alaska is called CARVE, C-A-R-V-E. So I think you can go the same website, except put CARVE at the end of it, and that will get you to that project website. So if you're really interested in what's going on and the daily activities of those projects, you can go to the project websites.
Especially this ice bridge. I mean, they are actively measuring the ice and ice melting and all that stuff.
Right, yeah. What they're doing is basically they fly similar flight lines every year, and using the equipment on board, they can get extremely accurate measurements of ice thickness, ice elevation to within inches.
Oh, my gosh.
And so if you do that year after year after year, you start to get an understanding of what's going on with global climate change in those areas. And the thing that we have right now, we used to have a satellite called ICESat, and it died 3 or 4 years ago. And so NASA came up with this IceBridge project, which is really to do the same types of things on a smaller scale, because ICESat covered the whole Earth. So we're really looking at certain areas such as Antarctica, mm-hmm, and Greenland and the Arctic Ocean. And we'll keep doing this until we get the next ICESat, ICESat 2, which is currently scheduled for launch, I think, in 2016 and gets up operating. And so it's kind of as it says, it's the bridge between the two satellites that's really taking these detailed measurements of this area. So it's helping fill that gap that we don't have with the satellites.
And then because of what the data that they've gotten, the plane that left for Alaska, that's actually looking at vegetation that's starting to grow in places that it didn't before?
Right. If you go to the CARVE website, they've got some further explanation better than I can give you on that. But basically, as you start to, lose some ice, you'll get more vegetation growth, and that will change the atmosphere balance or whatever up in that area. And so they're just trying to understand that, and how that all fits into the world system, I guess. So,
and see what kind of vegetation is growing.
Well,
I'd be curious to know that.
it's probably similar to what's, that you see up there. But it's kind of a cool project to take a look at that as things change. And we did the flight, a similar type project last year. So this is the second year for the CARVE. So it was a very successful program last year. So they've gone back again this year to do some measurements.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So now second,
second.
We go down that list.
Yeah, second, we've got the Sandy Rocket program is extremely busy. We've got two flights coming up in White Sands, New Mexico at the end of April. I think one's on the 21st of April, one's on the 23rd. So they'll be doing some flights looking, doing some space studies. I can't even remember what they were now, but I know one was heliophysics, so it's looking at the sun. I'm not sure what the other one was. So one group shipped out yesterday to get ready for the first one, and then the one on the 23rd, they ship out, I think, early next week to get ready for that launch. So Sandy Rockets is very busy in that realm. Plus, we're getting ready to do one of our what we would call remote campaigns. So it's an area that we typically don't fly at, which is Kwajalein Island or Kwajalein Atoll in the Marshall Islands. It's the Army base there that we use, and we have four rockets that we'll be flying there. So one of the projects is two rockets, and they'll be flying, looking at some of the types of experiments that we've done here, looking at the ionosphere and how that develops in the sun interaction with the ionosphere. The other one is looking at radio communications in the ionosphere and how you get disturbances that occur and how that impacts the radio communications.
What's the ionosphere?
The ionosphere is kind of the upper atmosphere area.
Okay.
It's an area that they've identified. I think it's 75 to 300 miles up is what they would call the ionosphere. And so you have a lot of interactions in space going on. And so those are some of the types of things that we've studied, including some of the chemical releases that we've done. So they will be doing the same type thing up there, out there. The advantage of it, one of the neat things why they're there is that the activity there is a little bit different in the equator area. So they'll be, you know, very close to the equator for these launches. There's a specialized radar that's already located there that allow them to do some of the measurements they need to do. So that's why they go there. They're not going there on a boondoggle just because it's in the middle of the Pacific Ocean and they can enjoy the tropics. But there is a science reason why we go where we go, whether it be launches here at Wallops, while we're launching in Alaska, while we launch in Quad, why we launch in Sweden or Norway. So, you know, if we have a specific launch area or even White Sands, it's a science reason for the most part why we launch where we launch.
Now, remember when, was that last year? You know, time goes by so quickly. When you did the five sounding rockets in 5 minutes.
Right.
And you released the chemical.
Mm-hmm.
Was that sort of study the same area?
Yeah, it's kind of the same area. That one studied the upper jet stream. So, but the release we did recently, which is the red lithium
mm-hmm.
releases, if you remember that one.
Yep.
That was kind of in preparation for these missions coming up. And so these missions are going to have the lithium, and they may have what they call the TMA, which is the white clouds that we've used here before. So it's going to have a combination of those for that experiment. But they'll be doing the same thing. They'll be releasing the chemical clouds, which basically allows them to observe what's going on in space, to see the winds.
Yeah.
You don't think of winds at that area, but that's what you get with the sun-Earth interaction. You get the solar, you know, wind coming down and hitting the Earth. And so you do have winds in that area. And so that allows them to see that and how it's flowing.
It's just fascinating. It's just unbelievable. I tell you, that five rockets in 5 minutes, that was pretty cool.
That was pretty darn cool.
So
hopefully we may not have the chemical release, but I think they've got some salvos coming up. I know in late June, July, we have a two-rocket salvo that we have coming up, and that'd be a daytime launch. But
from here at Wallops,
and that's going to be they're going to release lithium on that one, but it's going to be in the daytime, so you're really not going to be able to see it. But with the special cameras that they're using, they will be able to see what's going on, so it may not be as visible to the naked eye.
That night one was cool.
So this will be a daytime. So the one we just finished up, I guess it was in January with the lithium test, that was kind of a precursor for the June mission here at Wallops, and then these ones at Quad that allows us to look at and see what is the best way to release the, you know, to develop and produce these clouds.
You know, it seems like just listening to you talk that there is so much research going into that part of space right now as far as the winds and even, I believe, debris. You were looking
right
at debris up there.
Yeah, there's a lot of interest in the interaction of the sun and its interaction with the Earth. Basically, it's what they call solar weather. And so you know when the sun erupts and sends out these waves of energy towards the Earth. So we like to, you know, we need to know what impact that has, because those things can interrupt power systems. They can interrupt communications coming down from satellites. They can interrupt your GPS signals. They can interrupt, you know, damaged satellites. So we're trying now to really understand what that sun-Earth connection is. And so there are programs within NASA and other government agencies to really try to understand that. If you go to NOAA, you can even look at the solar weather forecast for the day type thing. So it's kind of, you know, in the early 60s, there was a lot of work to understand the atmospheric weather. And so now we've kind of extended that research, and now we're looking at the solar weather. So it's kind of along those same capabilities and understanding that we're trying to get to.
You know, just a little side note, when we were talking outside before the show, you were mentioning, I told you I had some listeners call me up in Salisbury that they had gone down to look at the sun and the moon
right
and everything through
right
telescopes.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you were
yeah
telling me
yeah
about this project that was done recently.
Yeah, we just had at Wallops at the Visitor Center. We hosted what they call the Sun-Earth Connection Live webcast. And it's an annual event that the Sun-Earth Connection program within NASA does that really is tied into schools across the country and actually probably around the world. And so, you know, they were looking at what is this solar weather research that's being done, and and, you know, what's the latest activities and what's coming up as far as, you know, what is NASA going to be doing for studying this. And one of the reasons why Wallops was chosen this year was because there's just so much happening at Wallops.
Mm-hmm.
And we had just finished up, and I think it was in February, we did a Santa Rocket project out of Poker Flat, Alaska, that looked at the auroras, and the which are the northern lights, and the interaction of the sun and those activities. So they did a feature on that. But they also... you know, toured the Santa Rocket program because we do so much solar research with Santa Rockets. And then we also, as part of that program, they also looked at LADEE, the upcoming lunar mission that's going to come out of Wallops in the fall.
And what is LADEE?
Let me get this right now. It's Lunar Atmospheric Dust Environment Explorer. There you go.
Okay.
So that's a small satellite for NASA. It's built, managed out of the Ames Research Center in California, but it will be launching here out of Wallops. So it's going to be our first lunar mission.
Yeah,
so,
that's a big deal.
And that's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
That's a big deal for us. It's a, you know, to be able to accomplish this. So so we're really looking forward to you know, to that activity going on here in the fall. So it also looked at that. So it was kind of neat. We had about 100 school kids, middle school kids, mostly from the local area. We're down for that project. And then we also had the astronomy club out of Sussex County,
yeah,
which was the group you were talking to. And we have really started to partner with that group. They've been bringing down, this is the second one where they brought down telescopes, and they brought up their solar telescopes with, you know, so that you could safely look at the sun.
Phenomenal.
And what was going on. So, you know, it's a great group to work with. And so, you know, we're
now
really
you,
glad to partner with those
when
guys.
When you do things like the astronomy club, was that open to the public?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, the public was invited. They could come down to this thing. And you know, the students took up most of the seats in the auditorium for this project, but for this webcast. But yeah, the telescopes were set up, and anybody could look through them while they were there. So it was like over a three-hour period that they were down there.
Let me tell you, they were just raving about it, the group of guys that I talked to. They were from Bethany, and they said it was just off the charts.
Yeah, it's a great group to work with, and they do a lot of programs up in the Delaware, Bethany area, up on the boardwalks and that kind of stuff. So, you know, if you're ever up in that area, you know, it's a great group to go see what they're doing, because they're doing programs up in that area all the time. So, good group to work with.
All righty. So, you know, of course, I was telling you earlier, I was out on Wallops Island today, this morning with Orbital, and I was in the HIF.
The Horizontal Integration Facility.
Horizontal Integration Facility, and I actually saw the Antares totally put together. It's almost ready to be rolled out. It is unbelievable.
Yeah, they're really
incredible.
Everybody's really working towards. I mean, this is getting real, as we say. They rolled off, I think it was earlier. What day is this?
This is Thursday.
It's Thursday, yeah. I think earlier this week we rolled off the vehicle that was up on the pad for the hot fire test, the engine test. So that's been rolled off. And they've been busy getting, as you saw, the actual test flight vehicle ready. Right now they've scheduled or targeting the afternoon. Sometime that time is still being worked out, but we're looking at April 17th through the 19th, somewhere around that time frame. And so, I mean, the vehicle is pretty just about ready to go out to the pad.
Oh, it looks, yeah.
Yeah, so I think the plan is possibly late next week, and actually may be rolling out to the pad. So, so we're getting there. And, you know, people are really excited. And, you know, we have a lot of folks coming in to see this. You know, there'll be guests from Orbital that will be coming down for the launch. Right now we have somewhere around 75 media and social media folks coming in for the launch from all over the country. And even, I think, Japan, some of their media may be here. So it's picking up steam.
And just so our listeners are clear, this is actually the first major test.
This is the first test flight of the
test
vehicle.
Flight
of the vehicle. And so they won't be actually going to the space station with this one. It's really to check out the performance of the rocket itself. So they, as you saw this morning, they have what they call the mass simulator for the cargo module instead of, you know, that actually flying. It's a big piece of equipment or whatever that they built that simulates the mass and the size
and
of
exactly.
the cargo carrier and the service module for the Cygnus that will be eventually carrying supplies to the space station. So so it's really just a test of the vehicle. And then once that happens, and everything works fine, then you know, we're looking at the possibility of the first flight to the space station. It won't be taking up a full supply, but it will be taking up partial supplies to the space station, possibly in June.
Jeez.
So they'll be turning around fairly quickly to get the next one off. So I know, as I mentioned to you, I had reports that they brought actually the service module for the Cygnus, which is the propulsion system, the power systems, and all the electronics. For the Cygnus came down from Orbital's headquarters in Dulles, Virginia, was shipped down here Tuesday, and so I had folks telling me they saw it on the way down to the bypass, and I guess I passed here in Pocomoke about 4:45 or something in the evening, and it was just zipping through Pocomoke about that time. So they unpacked it yesterday, I believe it was, and so they're starting to put that all together. If you go to the Orbital website, which is www.orbital.com, you can see the pictures of the activities going on both in the HIF and for the Cygnus. They uploaded some of the supplies that they'll be taking on this second flight, which will be really testing out the Cygnus portion of the vehicle.
And making sure it can dock at the space station.
Yeah, it really won't dock. It's kind of a what we call a grapple. So the arm on the space station will go out and grab it, and then they pull it in. So it's not the automatic docking like you see
in the movies.
In the movies and all that. So this in this one, they actually, and the same thing with the Dragon SpaceX vehicle that carries supplies, it actually is grappled and pulled into the space station and docked that way. So, but still, you have to make sure that all the systems work. And so that's what will happen on the second flight. It won't be a full load of cargo, but they will be taking some cargo up. And so all that's been, or not all of it, but quite a bit of that's been uploaded on the cargo part of that. So over the next couple of weeks, they'll be mating the service module with the cargo module. And then it will, and that's being done on the Wallops main base in a separate facility. And then once that happens, then it goes over to Wallops Island where it's actually fueled that we put on it. And from there, it will go in a separate facility on the island, and then it will eventually go to the HIF and gets mated on to the next rocket.
Well, you know, just to be there and see everything put together, because the last time I was there was a year and a half ago, and it was in stages.
Right, right.
But, you know, we're looking at, 2 to 3 weeks for this thing going up.
Yeah, and it's a big vehicle.
It's big.
Until you're next to it.
It is big.
You got the
I got
sizes.
The specs here.
Yeah.
It's 131 feet long and 13 feet around,
in diameter.
So it is a big thing.
Yeah, for comparison, for those that have seen other launches from here, the largest thing we've launched to this point has been the Minotaur 1. Minotaur 1 is about 70 feet tall. So you're talking about a vehicle
just about half.
Almost twice the size of what we have flown out of here before. And the other, it's going to be neat to watch this because the Minotaur and Saturn rockets that we fly are all solid fuels. So you light them and they go. With the liquid fuel rocket, it's going to be slow moving when it comes off the pad. So it's going to be, more to see. Longer to see it go up and that type of thing. So it's not going to be,
like the sounding rocket.
It's not going to be like a sounding rocket and launching and it's gone. It's going to be a slow mover. So it's going to be kind of be, if you can get the Assateague as a good viewing spot, the NASA Visitor Center will be a good spot. Of course, all the local folks here know the nooks and crannies,
yes.
The back roads of where to go to and see it. So, if you have a good shot there, on the bays and things, it's going to be a neat vehicle to see fly.
Oh, it's going to be incredible to see fly because, seeing a sounding and a Minotaur, which that to me is just, off the charts. This, I can't even fathom. It's going to be so cool.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be different. I mean, since we've always flown solid fuel vehicles.
Yeah.
And so it's, as a liquid fuel vehicle, it's going to be different. And
now, what I did understand from today is that NASA is actually, you still coordinate everything that does go up to the space station. So
correct. Out of Johnson Space Center where...
Yep.
you know, the man's or the human spaceflight program basically operates out of. So they have management and operations of the space station. So, you know, they coordinate, you know, when the supplies go, because it's not only SpaceX and the Cygnus with Orbital. The Europeans have a cargo spacecraft that goes up. The Japanese have a cargo spacecraft. The Russians have a cargo spacecraft. So all that has to be coordinated when they go up, when they undock. You have to coordinate in there when you're going to switch crews, which go up on the Russian rocket right now.
Like today.
Going up this afternoon. Going up today. And so all that has to be coordinated and make sure, you know, supplies go up. And you know, SpaceX just went up and came back down on Tuesday with the Dragon capsule. And they brought some of the experiments back down with them, which is different, which is new. And, you know, very vital for the science that's going on up on the space station to be able to bring those samples and things back. So so all that is a logistical juggling act. So, you know, you have to try to figure out how to do that. So the guys at Johnson take care of all those things.
Which also, you know, the Coast Guard for the Atlantic Ocean.
Right.
And also the FAA.
Yeah, well, when we do a launch here, I mean, we coordinate with the Coast Guard. We coordinate with the Corps of Engineers also has a hand in it, with the U.S. Navy. We coordinate with the FAA, since, you know, any day you go up and outside and you look up, you see aircraft flying overhead. And we have to coordinate with NORAD whenever. And these are things we do for almost any launch we do. So it's just not the Antares, but any launch. So there's a lot of coordination on our part that you have to make sure everybody is in sync. And with the Antares, it's, you know, we're expecting, you know, large numbers of people. How many, we have no idea, because right now we're looking at the possibly in the week, you know, during the week, and we're not sure exactly what time yet and those types of things. So, you know, our folks are coordinating with the ACAMAC Emergency Management Center. You know, Virginia entities, the state entities are being included in all this that's being worked. Chincoteague officials, Assateague officials. So, you know, everybody is looking at that, because we're expecting, you know, large numbers. And so we're, you know, they're trying to make this thing go as smooth as possible as we can. But, and so hopefully we, you know, this will work out. And,
we'll start getting some information as soon as we hear it out to the listeners, plan.
We'll get more information once we get the time and, you know, and the places to go. And
yep.
And if you go to the Orbital website, there's a link that they have on there that tells the latest information, because really it's their vehicle. So,
yep.
You know, the stuff that we post on our website comes out after they do, because we have to coordinate with those guys and we follow what they're saying. So
it's their baby.
It's their baby, so it's their mission. And so their website is really a good spot to find out what the latest is, to get. They have a fact sheet on Antares if you want to find out more about the vehicle, and it kind of gives you an idea of how fast it's flying and those types of things. So it's a good source of information by going to their website.
Well, fantastic. Keith, thank you so much for coming in. It's always a pleasure.
Good to be here. I mean, it's just a lot going on over the next 6 months or so.
It's so exciting.
It's going to be fast moving.
Have a great day. That does conclude the Wallops and Assateague Islands Report. Bye-bye.
This has been the Wallops and Assateague Island Report.